Welcome to season two of Tribecast. And I'm going to warn you right up front, this will be the most personal podcast that I've ever done. You see, when I sensed God calling me to start this podcast, I knew that one of the things I would have to do at some point is to tell my personal story. Most of season one, I talked about telling the truth, about having nothing to hide. In fact, how the man who has nothing to hide is the most powerful man in the room. And as much as I've known that I needed to tell my own personal story, I've got to be honest, I wanted to sweep it under the rug. I wanted to act like it never happened, or maybe just referred to it as a rough patch or a tough season in my life. Yet, if me telling this story helps one person, it will all be worth it. 2 years ago, started a long process of depression in my life that spiraled into some serious suicidal thoughts that almost landed me in the hospital. I began a process of exactly the opposite of everything that I've been teaching on Tribecast. You see, the opposite of goal setting is anxiety and worrying. Because goal setting is dreaming and thinking about exactly what you want to have happen, when worry and anxiety is dreaming and thinking about exactly what you don't want to have happen. I stopped my daily habits. I quit Core 4. I wasn't journaling. I had no goals that I was chasing. And here's the crazy part. I have taught all this stuff for years, goal setting workshops, leadership workshops. I've had success at a pretty high level. And from the outside looking in, I'm sure it looked like I had it all together. But I sank into a dark and deep depression, and I literally wanted to die. This is my story. Welcome to Tribecast. I am Forrest Walden, founder and CEO of Iron Tribe Fitness. And on this podcast, I am going to help you find your tribe and maximize your life. 14 years ago, I speculated on a $1.3 million beach house. Things were good in business. I was feeling bulletproof. I had just sold one of my locations that had no debt on it, multiple six-figure sale, and decided that I was going to invest in real estate. Really had no idea what I was doing, but it was 2006. The market was crazy. You couldn't build them fast enough, and by the time we finished construction on that house, the market had turned, and you literally could not give the house away. My business plan for that house up to that point was to maybe own it long enough to throw a party, sell it, make a bunch of money, coast off into the sunset. But somehow I ended up owning that house because I had no other option. I couldn't sell it, and it about bankrupted me. And I just remember thinking, how in the world did I get here from literally thinking that I was never going to have to worry about money again? I can remember that thought going through my head. To facing down bankruptcy. And I remember very clearly there were two nights back to back where I did not sleep one wink. And I was tossing and I was turning and I was on the couch in our den trying to think through, how am I going to make this work? How am I going to afford this house? And the Lord spoke to me and he just asked me, he said, Forrest, do you trust me? And I said, you know, God, yeah, I trust you. And he asked me again, Forrest, do you trust me? And I just had to be really honest. And I said, God, you know, I don't trust you. If I trusted you, I wouldn't be up for the second night in a row. I wouldn't be tossing and turning. I wouldn't be racked with anxiety, wondering how I was going to make all this work. And God taught me a very valuable lesson, and that was that he can take it all away. No matter how secure I thought I was, no matter how successful I thought my business was, like in a moment, God said, Forrest, I can take it all away. And he led me to Luke 12, which has become one of my most famous or favorite parables in all of Scripture. And that's where Jesus is telling a parable basically about a successful entrepreneur who's looking to expand his business. And I'm going to read it to you and then unpack some of the lessons that God taught me from that parable. So this is from Luke 12, 16. The subtitle in my Bible is called The Story of the Rich Fool. And so Jesus is talking, he's telling the story to the Pharisees, and he says, a rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. In fact, his barns were full to overflowing. So he said, I know, I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones. Then I'll have room enough to store everything. And I'll sit back and I'll say to myself, my friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now, take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get all that you have stored for yourself? Yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. And so I just struggled for probably 18 months with that verse or with that story and really wrestling with, man, was he a fool because he built a successful business? And I'm like, no, he was a fool because he wasn't satisfied with his business and he wanted to expand it. And I prayed and I kept reading and I journaled and fasted and came back to it. And ultimately, it just jumped out at me. And maybe you got it on the first reading. But really, the only place where he was a fool is where he decided that he was so successful that he was going to use all of his money on himself, relax, eat, drink, and be merry. That's when Jesus called him a fool. And so I've told the story about how I thought I was going to go and run Never Thirst at that time. Not far after that house lesson, we started Never Thirst 10 years ago, and I thought God was calling me to that. And ultimately, he led me to starting Iron Tribe in 2010. And so on the heels of learning that he could take it all away, on the heels of learning that, you know, God wants us to be successful and to use our talents and our gifts and our passions to grow a for-purpose business, I started Iron Tribe. And that's why from the very beginning I said, God, don't let me miss the lessons of my past. And one of our core values was to connect God's blessings with his purpose. And Psalm 67, 1 and 2, I've talked about a lot on this podcast in season 1, was one of the main core values for Iron Tribe. And so we started in 2010. We had rocket growth, opened 6 of our own stores, franchised in 2012, sold 45 franchise locations. I was really aggressive building the infrastructure for the business. Real quickly found myself with about $1 million payroll on the franchise side of my business, well over that on the corporate store side of my business. And in 2015, I launched a huge 3-year vision to the team and to the franchise brand to get to 100 units by the end of 2018. And here we are, 2019, I have 37 units. So you can see that we completely failed on that huge vision that I launched to my team. And what happened, just making that a long story short, is most of the franchisees we sold to early on were Birmingham business owners who already had successful businesses here in Birmingham. And we weren't franchising Birmingham, so by default, they had to go to other markets. And although we had quick growth, I ended up with virtually all offsite owners. And in my industry of group personal training that's super service intensive, it wasn't successful for the most part to have offsite owners who weren't engaged daily in the operations of their business. And we had to really course correct and adjust from that. And we had basically a lot of franchise locations that weren't operating at the same type of levels our corporate stores were, certainly weren't hitting the numbers of our corporate stores. And so over the next couple of years, I slowed down franchising. I rebuilt my sales process. I got super focused on who I wanted as a franchisee, but I also had to close some units, and we had some terminations, and I had to walk some people through transfers and bringing in new owners and getting some of the old owners out. And it was super painful. I mean, a lot of those guys were my friends. They were certainly my clients. Some of them were my neighbors. Some of them were fellow church members at the same church I went to. And the pressure that I was experiencing of seeing people who invest in a model that I had built and created and weren't as successful with it as they had wanted or weren't successful at all and had to close, I mean, it was immense. And I had a really hard time separating the professional and the personal side from that, especially when it came to neighbors and friends. And it was just a lot of pressure. At the same time, I had a controller Very trusted position in my company. Obviously, anybody who handles your cash and your payroll and all that has to be a very trusted position. And I thought she was, and actually uncovered that she had stolen over $100,000 from me. And I had to testify in court and put her away for a couple years in jail. She has five kids. It was terrible. The whole process was terrible. And on top of that, as the business started to slow down and we didn't have the franchise sales coming in that we had initially, I had to start trimming down my leadership team. And it started with the firing of a good friend of mine, Tom DeLosa, a guy I had recruited all the way from Denver, Colorado to Birmingham. He moved his family 1,300 miles across the United States to come work for this business. And there was not enough business anymore for him to stay on. And so that was the first painful separation. On the heels of that, I bought out my partner, Jim. And then I had three VPs all in succession leave and start their own business. And they all went out pretty much the same way. Forrest, you've been an incredible mentor. You've given me tools. You've given me training. I'm ready to go start my own business. And on one hand, I'm cheering them on and saying, go take over the world. On the other hand, I'm like, my gosh, I'm sitting here left holding the cards. And then addition to that, one of my trusted employees, we had to part ways, and he opened a competing business a couple blocks from the location I'm actually recording this podcast. And we had long-term members leaving a lot of our gyms here in Birmingham and following him to his new location. And then Karen, who's my president now, at the time was VP of operations, she went into one of our gyms that was struggling to turn it around. So I literally found myself in an office that used to be full of high-powered, high-charged, motivated staff to me and just two other employees. And it felt like failure every day that I walked into this office. And it was really, really hard for me to deal with. And on top of that, I felt like our market was changing. I couldn't really grasp what type of marketing would resonate with our current customers. And our business was slowing down. And now I didn't have my chief marketing officer to help me figure out, especially on the digital side of things. And there was this whole new skill set I needed to develop myself. And I got to be honest, I found myself, this is fall of 2017, I would pull up to work and I would sit in my car and I would look at my office and I didn't want to go in, yet I didn't want to turn around and go back home. Here I was supposed to be the leader, supposed to have all the answers, and I was struggling on so many levels, self-confidence, feeling like a failure, thinking my business was collapsing around me. And on top of all this, I had these huge decisions and issues that were weighing on me. My Atlanta market had gone from being profitable, about $10,000 a month in profit, to literally losing $20,000 a month in a four-month period when my VP of support, Matt White, left the Atlanta market and moved to Nashville. I didn't have another team leader to send to Atlanta, and I was paralyzed on what to do about that market. I had a Vestavia store here, a corporate store in Birmingham that was just a failure to thrive store. It was at break even, but it never could seem to turn the corner and make money, and I really felt like I probably needed to close that business. On top of that, I was staring down at several huge infrastructure where it came to technology decisions on our business. I needed to rebuild our CRM, which was a six-figure decision. And I had a new marketing system that I was testing at the corporate level, but to roll it out brand-wide was going to be close to a $500,000 decision. And all these things were just weighing on me. And in September of 2017, I stopped sleeping. I either wouldn't fall asleep and stay up all night, or I'd wake up in the middle of the night and couldn't go back to sleep. And I'm talking every night I'd wake up on the couch. And I'll tell you this, everything is darker, scarier, and more oppressive in the middle of the night. I started going down what I now refer to as crazy train, where I would just ride these thoughts, just almost irrational thoughts about how bad things were and how I couldn't make a decision, how I was a failure. And then his lack of sleep compounded I started having suicidal thoughts. They started kind of innocuous, like, man, maybe it'd be easier not to be here. And they got worse. And I think pretty simply, I came to the conclusion that, man, just things would be easier for everyone if I wasn't here. And if I did manage to sleep, the first thing I'd think when I woke up is, I want to die. At least I'd be with Jesus. And I was very honest with Mindy, which I think is a huge part of this whole process of just sharing with her what was going on. And it was a really difficult time for us. I know from about October of 2017 to January, all the way through January of 18, I don't think I slept a full night. And I would literally go multiple nights with zero sleep, not one wink. And when Mindy would finally wake up in the morning, because I'd been up all night stewing and wrestling with these thoughts, I'd say, babe, I think we're going to need to sell the house. And she'd just be waking up. She's like, what are you talking about? Or I'd say, babe, I think we're going to go bankrupt. And she's like, Forrest, what are you talking about? And here's the crazy part. My financials and my business were fine. Yeah, we were having some struggles, and yes, there were some very difficult decisions. But like, I literally had just ridden these crazy train thoughts to the point where I was irrational. And again, I want to go back to what I said at the beginning of this podcast. Literally, I was doing the opposite of everything I have ever known to be successful in my life, everything I've ever taught others. I had abandoned all my habits. I was doing negative goal setting with worrying. I was not sleeping. I was dwelling on the negative. And I mean, Mindy was freaked out. She took all the guns out of our house. She took the – I'm a licensed carrier. She took the gun out of my car. She was tracking my every move on Life 360. And I'll say this. I mean, my wife, Mindy, fought for me. She I mean, she did everything in her power to help me through this difficult time. I could not have asked for a more supportive spouse during this process. But at the same time, she started working more at work, and she started to ask herself questions like, oh my gosh, you know, what am I going to do if Forrest can't provide? What am I going to do if Forrest is not around anymore? And we had really difficult conversations. It was terrible. And I remember Christmas Day 2017, what is supposed to be just an amazing day with family. It was terrible for me. I was overwhelmed with anxiety. I felt like an elephant was sitting on my chest. I could barely breathe. And I just remember thinking, like, I don't know if I'm going to make it. And we left the next day for Hawaii. Mindy's parents surprised us with a trip to Hawaii. And I will never forget being in Hawaii, just paradise, beautiful. And we're on a whale watching trip, and the entire family's on the front of the boat looking at whales. And I just walked to the back of the boat. I was the only one back there. And I stood back there for about 15 minutes. And the thought in my head was, I could just step off this boat and just float away. And everybody else, I think, would be in a better place. It's hard for me to even admit that. Now, it's hard for me to even fathom that those were the thoughts I was having. But that's where I was. And as I came back in January of 18, I found myself in this vicious cycle of staying up all night and then being completely ineffective at work. Because I had worried all night and because I haven't slept, I would get to work and I wouldn't be able to make even simple decisions. Definitely not these huge decisions like, should I close this gym? Should I sell this market? Should I invest in this technology? I mean, I was worthless. I was not leading well. I was not showing up in power. And I remember just one morning just hugging Mindy and apologizing to her and saying, I don't know how I've screwed all this up, and telling her, like, I'm in such a bad place that, like, I don't even think I could hold down a job right now, much less run a business. And I just got to be honest, like, my thoughts on depression up to this point in my life, I don't know if I'd ever, like, literally stopped to think about it, but I just didn't think it was real. I thought most people who suffered from it just needed to pull themselves up by the bootstraps and get a good workout in and set some goals and move on. And Guys, I was debilitated. I was in a really dangerous place. And I am not a medicine guy. It drives Mindy crazy. I don't get a flu shot. I don't take antibiotics. Like, I'm just not a medicine guy. But I knew, like, this was beyond my ability to get out of this funk. I was in depression. I remember looking up online the symptoms of depression. I'd had every single one of them. And so I went to UAB and I saw a psychiatrist, and it was so humbling to walk into that psych ward, that depressing hospital at UAB, and meet with a psychiatrist and admit like that I needed help. And they started me off with sleep meds and depression meds, and I still didn't sleep. Mindy was getting desperate. She was so scared that I wasn't even sleeping with the medication. And my parents came to my house one night. This is mid-January of 18, so what, you know, year and a half ago. And I wanted to check me into the hospital so I would sleep. And I told him, I said, look, I appreciate the concern. I have been very self-aware through this whole process. And if I thought that I needed that, I would tell you and I would go. But I really don't think I need it. And they agreed to let me continue to make the choices. They didn't force me. But my mom, Ricky, my stepdad, my wife, Karen, my president here at work, Spencer, my good friend, who I hope to have on this podcast soon, they all, man, I could not have had a stronger support group around me, praying for me, encouraging me, helping me to get through this difficult time in my life. And I started to see a couple therapists and talk through these issues. And, you know, I remember specifically talking to one of those therapists and saying, you know, I have a really strong support system around me. I have my faith that never wavered. I never stopped reading my Bible. I have a strong family unit who is encouraging me, who's leaning into me during this difficult time. And I've never stopped working out. Like, how in the world do people make it when they get to this point, if they get to this point, without those things in their lives? And he said, Forrest, they don't make it. I'm literally right now waiting on a call from a mom of one of my clients, and he is in a coma from a drug overdose because he didn't have any of those things in his life. He's not gonna make it. And that was just such a wake-up call for me. And I also remember the psychiatrist telling me, look, you know, I can't explain exactly how this works, but one day your medication will kick in and things just won't be as bad. Like, you won't be able to go to crazy train or crazy town with those awful thoughts. And that's what happened. And I remember where it happened. I was driving home on Highway 31. I saw a billboard, and something about the billboard reminded me of about my franchise business, and I had a positive thought. And it was so alarming, I almost wanted to pull the car over on the road. I'm like, oh my gosh, I just had a positive thought. Because up to that point, I literally had lost the ability to experience joy, to experience anticipation, to be positive, or really just, you know, anything future-facing was all negative. I even remember my, at that time, 12-year-old daughter saying to my wife, Mom, why is Dad so sad all the time? I mean, my kids were noticing. A couple of my neighbors were noticing. Like, I couldn't hide it anymore. And thankfully, through the medication and through working through this with therapist and my support group, I started sleeping. Once I started sleeping, that really began a chain reaction of just recovery, and the medication started to kick in. And then I met with Ricky, and he said, all right, let's list out what is keeping you up at night. And I listed out my four biggest things that were keeping me up. Is what do I do with my Atlanta market? What do I do with my Vestavia store? What do I do with these two huge investment decisions back into the business? And we just walked through that list, and he said, all right, we're going to make decisions right now. And we're going to go at them 100%, and you're going to get these things done. And so we did. We went through the four things. We wrote down on paper exactly what I was going to do. And here's the interesting thing. He was literally taking me through a strategy that I teach in my goal setting workshops. And it's a three-step process to overcoming worrying. And it's so funny because I knew it, but I literally needed someone to remind me of it and then hold me accountable to it. And it's simply to put down on paper these crazy thoughts in your head and forcing yourself to articulate what is the worst thing that can happen, and then saying and committing to doing everything in your power to not allow that to happen, but also accept that even the worst outcome is not going to wreck your life. And so we did those things on all four of these areas. And I remember I was leaving his house and he said, "All right, we've made decisions. Do you feel better?" And I said, "No." I still wasn't healthy enough to feel like, okay, these things are going to make a difference. But we walked through those decisions. I sold Atlanta to a franchisee. I closed my Vestavia store, as difficult as it was, made the decision. I invested into my CRM system. I invested into this new marketing platform that I was launching to the rest of the brand. And again, I'm talking $500,000 decisions. So I'm sleeping at that point. I got this weight off of my shoulders. The fog started to lift, and happiness, joy, anticipation started to creep back in, and things actually started to click at work. And I started improving rapidly. I mean, from February all the way to June of 18, I mean, I came out of this thing just roaring. I remember the passion returning and the excitement returning. I was so grateful. I remember praying. It's like, "God, I didn't even know if you were going to give it back." But it actually created some serious issues with Mindy. I mean, she was having like PTSD. Here I was, she's thinking she's going to lose her husband. And all of a sudden, I'm back and I'm creating and I'm excited. And she broke down because she had been so strong for so long, supporting me and being positive and all that. And now I'm better. And it took her a long time to even believe I was better. And when she finally saw me really improving, I mean, she just broke down. And then I had to turn around and minister to her as she's recovering from everything that I put her through. It was hard. But things continued to improve. I got my passion back and my drive back. I started to rededicate myself to all of the things I had gotten away from, so many things that I've been teaching on this podcast that I know have to be core disciplines and behaviors in my life, my core four every morning, getting in the Word, getting in my workouts, journaling what I'm grateful for, having a one door for my week, one big goal that I'm going to work on that week, targets for my quarter, targets for my years, everything I taught in the Fact Map session at the very beginning of season one. I started all that back up. And so thankful to report year over year, our business is up 31%. I have a new lease on life. You know, in 2006, I opened this podcast talking about my beach house that I speculated on at the beach. God showed me clearly for us, I can take it all away. And I had learned that lesson, but in 2017, first part of 2018, I learned how deep taking it all the way really is. I mean, God can take away your hope, your passion, your desire to get out of bed in the morning, and for me, even the desire to live. And so a verse like 1 Corinthians 4:7, where it says, "What do you have that you have not been given?" And I just realized, like, everything we have is a gift, and you have to steward those gifts. We bring nothing to the table. As much as we want to feel like we bring things to the table, it's all been given to us. And so a big part of me getting healthy has been sharing the story. And I've never shared it as public as this on a podcast that will forever remain online, because it's hard to share these type of things. It's weakness. We want to sweep it under the rug. We want to act like we have it all together. And I just decided that I was going to be transparent and I was going to tell the truth. I shared this first with all of my franchisees and my staff and told them exactly what I had been through. A lot of them were not surprised because they were walking alongside me during that time. They saw it on my face. They saw it on my actions. They saw me locked in my office for hours at a time. Some of them were certainly surprised at how deep it went. What I have found is the more I have shared this story, the more I have heard from others who have gone through the exact same process or are in the middle of the exact same process. And what's interesting to me is I've been real transparent on social media, and typically what I won't get is a response on social media. I'll get a text because they don't really want to put it out there. They just want to have a conversation. And there's no telling how many of you listening today can resonate with what I just shared with you. Maybe you've been through it. Maybe you're in the middle of it now. And I just pray that my story would give you a little bit of confidence, a little bit of hope for the future, that God is faithful. He will be there in your deepest and darkest valley. He wants to teach you things that you will not learn on the mountaintop. And so I just want to share two verses. I could share so many takeaways from this valley, from really losing everything, my identity. My identity is a positive person. My identity is a creator, an entrepreneur, a motivator, a leader. And like all that was stripped away. And I was desperate. I was desperate for God. I was desperate for help. I had to use medication, something that's just an antithesis of really what I try to stand for and the way I live my life. And I was just completely humbled. So two verses. First one is Luke 22, 31. This is Jesus talking to Peter, and it's right around the crucifixion. And he said, "Peter, Satan has asked me to sift you like wheat, but I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers." So here's Jesus telling Peter, Satan has asked to test you. I've prayed that your faith won't fail. But the very next verse, "and when you have turned back," meaning you're going to fail. I know you're going to fail. "And when you turn back, use that to strengthen your brothers." And that just jumped out at me. It's like, I feel like that's what I went through. It felt like an attack. And yet Jesus was there the entire time. And now he's saying, now strengthen your brothers. Be transparent about what you went through. You don't have it all together. You don't have all the answers. And there's other people who need to hear this story. And the second verse is very similar. 2 Corinthians 1, 3 through 4. "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our troubles." Why? Why does God comfort us? "So that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God." So during my deepest, darkest days, I mean, God was there. He was faithful. He showed me so many things about his character. He showed me so much over-reliance on my own skills and pride in my own ability. And he just stripped all that away and just showed me that he is enough. And then what this verse says is, because he comforted me in my deepest, darkest affliction, I now can comfort others who are in trouble with the same comfort I received. So my prayer for this podcast is that you are comforted with the comfort I received, because I have found, as I just mentioned, that depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts is ubiquitous. I mean, it's everywhere. In this world we live in, there's so much pressure to measure up. There's so much pressure to be successful, to look a certain way, to act a certain way, to earn a certain way, to have a career a certain way. Social media is ever present. It's a constant game of comparison, a constant game of coveting. And ultimately, you can feel like, I don't measure up. I don't have it all together. My life's not going the way that I wanted it to go. And you just feel the control that you long to have just being stripped away. And so my encouragement is to lean into the Lord, to focus on daily disciplines that you can control just to set up your day to be successful, to set up your day in the Word, to have goals that you're working towards, but also to surrender all that to the Lord with just open hands, because you can't control it all. So today, a year and a half, really 2 years from when this started, a year and a half since I started getting healthy, removed from all this, I can honestly say I am at the best and healthiest place that I've ever been. I'm still on very low levels of medication daily, like 10 milligrams, super, super low. I think I'll always have this as a struggle. I have a pretty significant family history of depression, and I know that it's something that I can succumb to now and have to really, really guard myself. And the way I'll do that is through the behaviors. And so even this podcast, the desire to do this podcast was ultimately to tell this story. And I went through the whole first season without telling it. I think the introduction, the very first episode, I alluded to it, thought I would tell it a lot sooner than I did. And I got to be honest, the temptation was not to tell it, because I care what you think. And I want you to look up to me. I want to be a leader. I want to be a successful thought leader and entrepreneur. And sharing this type of stuff doesn't really lend itself to that type of credibility. But again, what I've learned is transparency really does breed authenticity and the ability to share the comfort that I've received. So if you've struggled in this area, just be encouraged. You are not alone. I would recommend getting on medication, seeing a therapist, having support in your life. If you don't have it at the family level, creating it with an accountability group. I mean, it's one of the reasons I have stressed that so hard throughout all of season one, of being in community of like-minded people who can encourage you. You know, Ecclesiastes talks about a strand of three is not easily broken. And this life was not meant to be lived in isolation. You need community around you. And I just don't know where I would be if I hadn't had my wife and my mom and people here at work and good friends like Spencer and several others who were just pouring into me and supporting me and praying for me and encouraging me. And so you guys need that. And then ultimately, just lean on the Lord. He is strong when we're not. He's always there. And so, again, I just hope this is an encouragement to you. Not only that I went through it, but that I'm stronger now. I realize in humility that I don't have it all together. And I am going to work my hardest to make the most of what I've been given and to steward my gifts. John 3:30, I read it this morning. He must increase, I must decrease. And when things are going well, I tend to get those flipped around, and I want to increase. And God, you're good, but you know, I want to be seen as glorious, not you. And so, when He humbles me and takes me through these valleys, it's just a reminder that He's in control. He's the one who must increase. I need to decrease and just serve Him. So, I told you it was going to be the most personal podcast. It is deepest, darkest. Painful, most painful thing I've ever been through in my life, but I do believe it's made me a better leader. I think it's made me someone who is more empathetic with others' pain, certainly more empathetic around the whole issue of depression. It's real. It's a disease. It needs to be treated as such. I've learned that. And just want to encourage you and appreciate you guys for listening. And we will be back on next week. Got a great list of guests lined up, and excited about season 2 of Tribecast.